this is why I went through the beatings. This is why I had to step in front of my mom. This is why every painful moment in my entire life had led to me, God putting me in the place to say, Jason, you were beaten throughout your entire life so that you could stand up for the vulnerable and the weak.
This is Leah Steele. Welcome to the Wealth Witch Podcast. Just a few years ago, I experienced complete financial collapse. We lost a business, our home, and a car. My husband was selling plasma to pay for diapers and formula. I was living a life I hated, and I was miserable. It was the lowest part of my life. It ended up being my biggest blessing. Just a few short years later, I've designed the life of my dreams. I live a life of luxury in beautiful Bali, Indonesia, travel the world, and spend my days helping others manifest wealth and abundance. Living a purpose-led life changed everything for me. This podcast is about my journey, my top tips and tools for manifestation, and interviews with all the amazing, world-changing, inspiring people I meet along the way. Welcome to my world.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Wealth Witch Podcast. I am your host, Leah Steele, and I am so excited today to be joined by one of my dearest friends, my mentor, somebody that I look up to tremendously, Jason Cisneros, aka the Bald Avenger, who is the chairman and founder of Anton J Global, and just an overall really incredible human being. And I always just feel really grateful to be able to have him come on and talk to any of my audience because he has a wealth of knowledge about so many things. I love having these conversations with Jason because we tend to both be a little bit controversial and you never know what's going to come out on one of these shows. So welcome, Jason. I'm so glad you're here. I would love for you to just start off with telling us a little bit about how the Bald Avenger came to be and then also all of the incredible things that Anton J does.
Well, I'm happy to be on The Wealth Witch. What a great title, The Wealth Witch. So The Bald Avenger is a show that I started because, oddly enough, it was started a while back because things were, I just saw in the news, right? It's become so polarized. It's either Democrat or Republican, and you're either in one of those camps or you hate each other. And, you know, I think most of the world falls in the land of practical solutions, regardless of who gets the credit or whether it's Democrat or Republican or whatever it is, you know. And then also around the idea of putting out there, as I got into philanthropy and stuff like that, I just didn't see that there was a loud enough voices for anti-trafficking or anti-domestic violence, you know, feeding people, those types of things. And so I developed this character called the Bald Avenger, which came from my younger daughter. We were at the zoo one day and we were walking by the silverback gorillas and she goes, Daddy, it's you. And so a lot of people say that that's who I turn into when somebody's messing with the people that I love. And the scales of justice, it's to, you know, I find myself in the middle, like again, the practical middle of solution-based things, because that's really the only way that you're going to move forward. You can be ideological to a fault on the right or the left, and you're not going to get anything done, and all you're going to do is alienate people. And then the shield came from A New Dawn, which is for domestic violence. That's Kat Dawn, who you know. And so that all kind of came together, and it's a show that where we make fun of things. We have hard conversations. We talk about racial issues. We talk about COVID. We talk about all of the things that need to be spoken about, and, you know, with one perspective, make fun of the stupid shit that's going on both sides of the equation, and to come together and offer some real practical applications for those people that are out there looking for an answer of like, what do I do, right? Instead of hate, right? Or instead of demagoguery, instead of tearing people down, what do I do? Because I don't really care which side wins and which side loses, as long as the world or America is moving forward. So that show has been, you know, we're about 160 episodes in now, which is, it blows my mind. And I just keep doing them and people keep watching it. So Anton J. Global is my company. It's a consulting company and my private equity business. And as you know, I own, have bought and turned around multiple companies, hundreds of them. And my private equity side, I sold a bunch of my businesses last year. It was really great timing. Now I know it was great timing. So sold several businesses, kind of cashed out and was looking to really throw myself into philanthropy in anti-child trafficking world where I go undercover. We do those work for rescues and then also domestic violence and then feeding people. Also anti-suicide, veterans issues, pretty much anything anybody needs help with that I can lend a voice to. But Anton J. Global is the side of the business that I didn't realize would become part of my activism, because in order for us to be able to do the things, like I believe everybody watching your show has a heart to serve and they want to make the world better and they want to do those things. And we get caught up in having to pay the rent and having to run our businesses or whatever it is. And we feel our opportunity to make an impact kind of floating away from us as we get older. And I didn't know that all the years that I spent in business, getting my ass handed to me, learning all the skills that I did, going bankrupt, you know, doing all the things that I did, would turn into a very important piece of my activism, which is as I built up those skills, again, not from a fancy college. I didn't graduate from high school. I'm not from a rich family. I think that I've made more money than the last three generations of my family combined. I'm not from a good last name, not from the right side of the tracks, not like all of the things. I had a criminal record when I was younger. My adopted father was very abusive. Went to prison for trying to kill me and my mom when I was 17, dealt drugs, collected money, all that stuff, and switched that over into a life of productivity and then turn that life of productivity where it could free me up to be able to do the things that I do in philanthropy. Well, along the way, I discovered that I could give every single penny that I have away to all these different charities and it wouldn't make a dent in the universe, right? It would just be writing checks and watching it go away. So I took my business skill sets and helped apply it to those charities. And then also we started a consulting business that could help good people make more money, get more time so they could do more good. That's literally the motto behind Anton J. Global. And we started teaching companies that have a good heart, that on their P&L, they're writing checks for cancer. It doesn't have to be what I care about, but good-hearted people that were giving when they have less are going to give when they have more. And that has played out to be extraordinarily true as we all gather together once or twice a year with the Unstoppable platform. And we all come together and the business owners that we've helped make more money get together with the charities that we help. And they fall in love with each other. And then there's a consistent stream of income for them. And so Anton J. Global is important to me. I'm done. I mean, I say I'm done. I'm never done. I'm always buying shit and fixing shit and all that because that's kind of who I am. But the consulting company side of what we do is very important because if I can help 10 companies make $1 million to $100 million more money, that's more money that's going to go back into charity and further that global reach of what we've called Misfit Nation now, and which is just a bunch of screw ups that figured out that we all belong together. And so that's how it's all played out. And Anton J. Global is that side of it where we can help any company. It doesn't matter who you are, what position you're in. You're a shining example of somebody who's applied our principles and done very well for yourself. And that's the important side of what we do. It's a different kind of consulting company. If you just want five more houses and you want a jet and all that kind of shit, that's fine. But there's lots of other consulting companies for you. If you have a heart for service, and I don't mind people having five houses and jets and all that kind of stuff, obviously. But at the end of the day, there's got to be a heart for service. So that's kind of how those two tie together.
Yeah, amazing. And I think, the thing that I love talking to you most about is this idea of service. And, I guess just to briefly bring perhaps some of the podcast listeners up to speed that don't know our story. Jason and I met several years ago while I was in the middle of my successful and you know, the business that I had put a significant amount of my life into at that point, that business was collapsing. And I was beside myself. I was, I think Jason actually does a much better job of explaining my state when I walked into his office, but we had met through mutual friends. And those of you that are listening to this podcast know I live my life divinely guided. And literally God was like, you need to go talk to Jason. And I didn't know Jason at the time well enough really to pick up the phone and say, hey, I want to come meet with you. But you know, we'd met a few times and I was given that direction. And if you know me, you know that when I get that direction from God, I take it. So I called Jason and said, hey, you know, it's Leah, can I come meet with you? And so Jason, I love how you tell this story actually. So I'll let you tell the next part of the story, but it was really a, you know, listening to that guidance was one of the most important things that I've done in my life. And I absolutely am where I am today because of mentorship and help and guidance and a shoulder to cry on that Jason provided to me during that really difficult time.
Well, which, by the way, where you are, I mean, you just showed me, right? You've got an infinity pool that pours out into the ocean in Bali with your house and your, you know, the servants and the massages and the tan and all that stuff. So I couldn't be happier, you know, for you and your entire family who, you know, I love. But, you know, again, it was, you came to see me. We had never met in person, right? We had never met in person yet.
We had met at one event. We had
luncheon. It was a luncheon, right? Yeah, yeah, that's right. Okay. So we met the one time and you called me up and you say, hey, I want to meet with you. And that's how a lot of, and it's important for people to hear, not just for our story, but as people are navigating their own lives, that if someone's put into your life, right? If someone that has a bit of knowledge that you need and you feel some kind of way about going to see them and you're embarrassed or you don't want them to see the black part of your life or where it's falling apart, all that kind of stuff, that is the very moment that you need to make that phone call to that person because it's necessary, right? So you call up, I have no idea what to expect. I say yes to meetings all the time. And so you come walking in and you broke down. You know, you broke down. And anybody that knows Leah knows that she's not a breakdown kind of cry, ball, like snot coming out of her nose and tear, you know, all that. She's not that kind of a person.
So, I'm not sure there was snot coming out of my nose, but the rest is a pretty accurate picture.
Yeah. And, you know, tears and makeup and stuff. But when you did that, like, you got to understand, I was that person before. I went bankrupt 3 times and lost my mind and got a divorce and lost my home, my reputation and all of that stuff. I lost that and I went through that. So seeing that in another human being, I could recognize where she was coming from. And I could also recognize the strength that emanated from inside of you, that the guts that it took for you to be sitting in that chair and displaying that kind of vulnerability to virtually a stranger at the time, you know, virtually a stranger. So part of what happened was you told me what was going on. And I said, okay, are you done crying now? Right? Let's fix this shit. And we went to work and we said, okay, step by step by step. There is a sequence to business success, period, end of sentence. And if you don't know that sequence, no amount of buying shit from all these fake internet gurus and marketing geniuses and all that other kind of stuff. 90% of companies go out of business in the first 5 years of operations anyway, because they don't know what the hell they're doing. And they keep buying information from people who haven't failed, who read a book. You know, the reason why you're so successful with The Wealth Witch is because you went through this shit. People are buying experience mixed with competence, mixed with confidence, mixed with a heart, right? That's the combination for when you're buying advice from somebody. And I never wanted to be that guy. I fought it for the longest time. I'm like, I'm buying my own shit. I got my secret. I'm good. I'm buying my own companies. I'm fixing them. I never wanted to be that guy until we realized, A, it could add a lot more value to the world of philanthropy and charity, and that it could help people just like you and just like me, people that are struggling, looking for real answers, who have no problem. And I knew this about you when I started talking to you, is that I knew you didn't have a problem doing the hard work, right? Doing the hard work. And then I also figured out, I never know this until I find it out. Do you have a problem hearing the hard truth, right? And you didn't. Like, you took the stuff, and some of the stuff that I said wasn't nice. Some of the stuff that I said wasn't easy, but you took that and you're like, okay, I have to fix my problem. The shit that I've been doing doesn't work. I better go and try what Jason's talking about here. And so you did. And then obviously you take that base, which is kind of what we're really great at Anton J Global, is making sure that your base is set so that you can stack success on top of it. And you've done a really great job of doing that. So I think, you know, through that process, I got to know who you were as a human being. I got to know your family, obviously, and you got to know who I was. And we just are lifelong friends from then on.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think there are so many things that I can talk to you about, because you're a wealth of knowledge and wisdom in so many areas. But I think I would love to really talk to you about one of your passion projects, because it's something that I've really wanted to get more involved in. And I just see you making such an incredible, incredible difference in the world when it comes to sex trafficking and helping to rescue people that are imprisoned in these horrible, horrible situations. And I just admire how committed you are to this. And so I would love to just talk to you a little bit about that, because it also leads into, I think, the theme of what I would love for this show to be about, which is how important it is to just be of service and in all ways and in each moment of your life. But you do this in a really big, powerful, impactful way. And I think that it's amazing, on one hand, that the world is actually becoming more aware of this problem. But you've been involved in this for a long time, and this is something that you've been passionate about for a long time. So I would love to just hear what inspires you to continue to put yourself in dangerous situations. What inspires you to, you know, continue to fund and financially back these projects and any project that you're currently promoting and, well, not even promoting, but that you're currently supporting. I would love for you to talk about that as well. And we'll definitely post information in the description of the podcast of how the listeners can also donate and help out. But I'd love for you to share on this.
Yeah, for sure. Let's talk about this a little bit. And again, let's take a little bit of a different angle, because we live in a weird time right now, which has been like 2020, right? 20 is my lucky number, number one. And when we were coming into 2020, man, I had a head of steam on some things and some business deals and blah, 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 blah. And I knew in my gut that my entire life had led to 2020 for a reason. And it turns out that it has been the best year of my entire life, that it wasn't the year that I expected, right? And so as we start talking a little bit about the charity and the philanthropy, which are such weak words for you taking your place in the universe to ease suffering, right? That's just the words that we kind of come together around. I have a new line of like shirts and stuff that are coming out that says, ease suffering by any means necessary, right? Because that's how I feel about it. So when you look at trafficking, human trafficking, I watched a movie years ago and I had no idea the level and the scope of children being taken and used by perverts and pedophiles in the world. I was clueless to it. And I'm telling you, I come from a very dark background, drugs and all that kind of stuff. I was absolutely clueless. And I saw that movie and I watch it. I get goosebumps every time I think about this. I watched it and I got in my car, wrote a big check, right? And then I went and sat in my car, and it got over about 11 p.m. And I sat in my car and cried and cried and cried and was like hitting the steering wheel. And I was like, how, like, if there's a God out there, how in the world is this possible, you know? And it was a moment. Pastor Rudy, who I run with at CERT Ministries now, you know, tells a very similar story for him. But for me, it was, I sat in that car until the sun came up, and then I grabbed my phone and I did a Facebook Live. And I said, I don't know what I'm going to do. There's this disgusting thing that I just found out about. I'm pissed. I haven't slept, but I'm going to do something. So I started digging into, you know, to that organization. That organization I ended up going on my first undercover mission with. I got to see this stuff up close and personal. We took Tony Robbins on that trip with us and pulled 36 little girls out, put 11 traffickers away. And whatever I thought it was, and then what I saw in person changed me as a man forever. It's like you wake up one day and you think your life is going one direction, but it changed my life forever. The things that I saw, the girls that I saw, the guys that were involved in this process, the process that we had to go through to get them, the arrests, the communication between governments, the interaction with the police, both local and federal, and you know, all of this stuff, it just changed me. I saw my own daughters, right, in that scenario when I was there. And I just became a man obsessed. Now let's take a step back, because I've been obsessed with domestic violence because that's how I was raised. I started stepping in front of my mom to take her beatings as early as 6, 7, 8 years old. Broken nose. My nose is, as I'm in my pictures when I'm growing up, are all over my face, you know, it's different places. And so I was really passionate about that, but it was this sold out thing. Prior to that, I was doing really well with business. I was doing a lot of good already. I was working in charitable ways, but something shifted inside of me that said, this is what I was born for. This is why I went through the beatings. This is why I had to step in front of my mom. This is why every painful moment in my entire life had led to me, God putting me in the place to say, Jason, you were beaten throughout your entire life so that you could stand up for the vulnerable and the weak. That is why I allowed that to happen. That is why, that, because I can tell you hundreds and hundreds of stories about my, you know, I got stabbed in the chest. I have a scar all the way across it. I've been shot in the leg. I've been, you know, there's been multiple times when I should have died, and I was kept here and protected and guarded. Forget about my story for a second, because I don't ever want you to think it's about me. It's about your story. It's about your journey in life. It's about the shit that's hit you in the face. It's about those things that have brought you to your knees. Like Leah and I were talking about earlier, it's those things that crush your spirit and your soul, and they take your very breath away. And you come out the next day, the sun rises, and you keep fucking walking. Right? It's your entire life up to now has been waiting to call you to service, right? I live by a very simple principle. And it's this, is that I was put on this earth to become the best version of who I am for the purpose of serving other people. If you have joy missing in your life, if you are caught up in this racial nonsense and the COVID nonsense and the wear a mask, not wear a mask, you can have an opinion on it. But if you spend your days arguing with people who are never going to agree with you, then that means that you are avoiding and hiding and trying to push yourself away from that destiny that's been yelling in your fucking ears from the first moment that something happened to you that shouldn't have. There's two very different levels of victims in this world. Let's talk about the first group first. Victims are people who have had choice ripped out of their life. A 6 or a 7-year-old child right now that is being sold 3 or 4 times tonight for the sexual pleasure of some fucking pedophile, that child is a victim. There's a woman right now that is being beaten in her own home, having her teeth knocked out, that's a prisoner that has had her choice ripped out because the husband or whoever it is might kill the kids, might kill you, might kill whatever. That person has had the choice ripped out of their life. There's a child right now, every 4 seconds, 1, 2, 3, 4, somebody drops dead of starvation in foreign countries, in our country, that fall over dead from starvation. And at the end of the day, when that happens, it's not their choice. They're not choosing to starve to death. You know, they've got governments that care more about the gold in their own pockets than they do about their own citizens, right? And there's somebody right now that's contemplating suicide that has had choice ripped out because nobody stepped into their life and said, you're not fucking broken. You're not broken. You are loved. You are meant to be here. You are not a mistake. You are not somebody that the world would be better off without you. That's not true, right? And so when you come to that realization, then you switch over into the fucking victimhood bullshit that I see all over the internet right now. Oh, you know, a cop pulled me over because I was black when I was 17 years old and treated me poorly. It's not happening right now. Police aren't hunting black people down in the street to kill them. My point is that I don't believe this world is racist anymore. I believe that there was moments when it was, but I don't know anybody racist. I don't know anybody that is stupid enough to look at another human being's skin color and determine anything from it without knowing who they are as a human being. Okay. I don't know anybody that stupid. And if I do so know somebody that stupid, they're not my friend. I promise you. So anyway, all of that to come back to the fact to say that we are rewarding false victimhood like crazy with our attention and with our blackout Tuesdays and with our COVID Monday, and, you know, all this other stuff that we're putting out there. We are absolutely forgetting that you're not actually a victim, right? There may have been some bad shit that happened to you, and that cop that stopped you and did that thing to you, he should have his nuts kicked up between his legs. You know, if you got raped and if you had a sexist boss or like all of that stuff, I wish that I could go back and choke those people for you, but I can't, right? And nobody can reverse from this moment backwards. I can't go back and change our conversation we just had. It's being recorded. The recording of your life has happened. And if you went to watch a fantastic movie and you went to go, you know, go see, let's say Rocky IV or, you know, whatever. What's your favorite movie, Leah?
Rocky is my favorite movie. Did you not Perfect. Know that?
I did not know that, but Rocky, okay? So Rocky, and just imagine walking in about 3/4 into the movie and you see a 30-second clip and then you walk out and you go, that was the worst movie I've ever seen. I hate Rocky. You watch 30 seconds. And yet what we do is we take that 30 seconds, forgetting and filing away the rest of our life that we've been loved, we've made love, we've been on the beach naked, we've gotten drunk with friends, we've gotten sober with friends, we've had parties, we've saved people, we've donated to this, I've had success in my business. I'm breathing for crying out loud, right? We forget all of the great things in our life because the thing that we get attention for is that horrible thing. I'm not making light of the things that happen to people, but what I'm saying is we take that 30-second snapshot and then we allow that moment in time or those moments that strung together to define us for the rest of our fucking lives. And that makes us a selfish prick. It doesn't make us a victim. Now, if you need love to get past that, then we're here for it, right? But love is not easy. Love is me looking you in the eyes and go, time to shut the fuck up, Leah. You know, you're going to cry or are we going to get this shit done? Isn't that kind of how it went?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I love you enough to get past all the horseshit. I don't need to know what happened. I know how to fix shit, right? So let's start fixing it. And that's how we need to be in other people's lives. Look, I understand that thing happened. I put myself on multiple shows that were all black and then me, right? While all of that stuff was happening. And it was very consistent that I got lots of stories about two or three things that happened to them, and then they couldn't come up with anything else. And then they started pulling from mainstream media, which kind of keeps that whole victimhood mentality going. And at the end of the day, we're just like that. I was like that for many, many years. It was my adopted father's fault. I could pull that card and everybody would go, poor Jason. His adopted father went to prison for trying to kill him and his mom when he was 17. You know, that excuses. No wonder he's breaking the law. No wonder he's broke. No wonder he's this. No wonder he's that. And that didn't do anything but make me feel good in the moment, but it did nothing to strengthen my long-term viability as a father, as a husband, as a member of my community, as a member of society, as a member of my country, and as a member of this world. It did nothing for that. And so I kept telling that story over and over and over again until what happens is you start hiding from it with booze, with drugs, with sex, with food, whatever it is, you're hiding behind that stuff. instead of dealing with it and going, you know what? I went back and said, you know what? Not only do I forgive my adopted father for the shit he put me through for the better part of my life, I'm grateful for him. Thank God that man was my adopted father. Thank God he punched me in the face as much as he did. Thank God I had to step in front of my mom. Thank God I saw all that, because at the end of the day, now I can look at my life and go, that's the shit that's important. That's the shit that's important. And it made me strong as a beast to be able to do it, which is exactly everybody that's out there that's had something that you feel like broke you in your life. You are stronger in that broken place than you are anywhere else in your life. And so you got to go back there and be grateful for that moment. Be grateful for that time, because it gets you past and it puts you into a mode. And then I'm going to shut the hell up. I'm sorry, but I just kind of take it over your show. But at the end of the day, it puts you into that mode where you say, okay, true joy and happiness comes from progress, which means me getting better as a human being. That means reading. That means writing your own story. That means improving your knowledge base, going to the gym, keeping yourself fit, learning how to love other people, doing that kind of stuff, right? And being able to become the best you can and find some other group outside of you that is doing worse than you are and go serve them. I don't care if you have $5 to your name, go walk into a children's cancer ward and go kiss one of those children on their bald heads. They're worse off than you. There are people that had plans for today that didn't wake up. There's a lot of people that need you in the spot that you're in. And until you realize that your life and your legacy is how much you do for other people and not how much you accumulate for yourself, you're fucked.
Hey, I hope you're enjoying this episode of the Wealth Witch podcast. I wanted to take a quick break to talk to you about an amazing offer I have to work with me like my high-end clients do for a fraction of the investment. If there's anything that the last several months of chaos and change has showed us, it's that our perceptions of what is safe, stable, and secure is anything but. You are your guarantee. You are the key to unlocking and calling in the wealth that you desire. If you don't already know, I'm all about belief and intention. And for me, deciding is the most important action you can take. So I don't need to convince you. You'll either resonate with this or not. The only prerequisite that you need to have is a desire to change your current financial reality. This mastermind I'm about to tell you about is about empowering you to take back control of your financial destiny and take action towards creating the life that you deeply desire. The Wealth Alchemy Mastermind is hosted via the Telegram app, and I've set it up in a way that it's accessible. This is an incredible opportunity to work with me in this mastermind at a special pre-launch rate of $44 a month. Yes, you heard that right. Just $44 a month to work with me at the same level that some of my high-end clients do. So what do you get? Weekly exclusive content and training, a monthly Zoom coaching call, a monthly Q&A session, wealth paradigm downloads, wealth activations, and a mastermind chat full of like-minded community. You aren't doing this mastermind for the content. You're doing it for the transmissions, period. You will be activated with abundance just by being in this container. But you have to act fast. The pre-launch offer is only available for a limited time, so click the link in the description of the podcast and sign up now. I'd love for you to join me, so do the thing. Now back to the podcast. The message is so powerful that you're delivering right now. And, you know, I didn't want to be the wealth witch. I didn't want to be emancipating people from financial slavery consciousness. That wasn't the plan. But that place that almost destroyed me, when I walked out of that, I walked out stronger, exactly what you're saying. And I got to make a decision in those moments. Was I going to sink into failure and despair and point fingers outwardly at all of the injustices that were done along the way that led us to losing $3 million and being 3 hours away from being homeless and all of those things? Or was I going to make a choice and make a decision in that moment that I could overcome, that my greatest challenges ultimately could become my greatest gifts? And so I think that those things that you've been through in your life, they are your superpowers. And you wouldn't have the power and you wouldn't have the ability to help other people if you hadn't been in those moments. And so for me now, you literally can throw anything at me because I know that whatever's being given to me as a challenge, whatever's being given to me as something that I may perceive to be an obstacle in that moment, there is a gift and a blessing on the other side of that that always comes with my ability to help more people, my ability to serve. So that's where this calling, the Wealth Witch, came from. It was like, I got called into that because I had been through this incredible experience that would have leveled many people. And I'm grateful. I'm so grateful for it. And I'm so grateful for the role that you played in it as well. I want to talk to you about something because I think that you have a very unique perspective on this. And it's definitely something that's quite controversial at the time. But I'd really just love to get your perspective because you said something earlier when you were talking about when you're going in on these rescue missions and the coordination that it takes at a law enforcement level and the coordination that it takes at a government, you know, governments talking to governments level. And we've got this huge movement happening in the United States right now to defund the police. We have many, many people around the world with negative viewpoints and perspectives on law enforcement. So I would love to just hear you talk about that because when we talk about something like this, like a rescue mission where it really depends upon coordination of these forces to save these children, I would love to hear, you know, what you think about this. And I mean, I already know what you think, but I would love for you to share what you think with my listeners.
Well, you know, I gotta, let's start because it is a unique perspective because I have been arrested, rightfully so. I was breaking the law, right? I have been tased. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff that have happened to me, you know, and I've had guns pulled on me. And at the end of the day, like, here's one thing that I knew for sure, okay? But back then is I would call them pigs, I would spit on them, you know, I would do all that kind of stuff. And one thing I knew not to do was to resist arrest. Don't resist arrest, dumbass. You know why? Because you end up dead. You know, if you fuck with a cop, they've got a gun, they will shoot your ass if it's between them going home and them arresting some dumbass that may have a weapon, okay? So I want to just say that because that was my perspective. I hated cops. But go back to what happened when ultimately my adopted father went to prison. It was police officers that made that happen. It was a DA that back then, it wasn't as big of a deal for the domestic violence sort of thing. It was the judge, right? It was the legal system that actually came to the rescue of my mother who had been in and out of that. And I'll tell you a little story just about that so that we can advance the story. But I remember being six or seven years old. She was trying to escape and he rammed us and we went end over end in a little red Volkswagen. It was one of the first times that my nose got busted. She cracked her head and was bleeding. And we came to rest on the cop station grass. And when we got out of the car, and she was staggering around and trying to pull me out and hoping I was okay. And my adopted father was just walking up to us like nothing happened, you know, and said, you know, started running towards the police. It came out of the police station. And she goes, he's trying to kill us. He's trying to kill us. And he goes, what did you do to piss him off? There was a very deep hatred in my heart for somebody looking at my mother, who to this day is a walking fucking angel to me, and looking at her and saying, what did you do to piss him off? When you look at a lot of the kids that end up being pulled into trafficking, they end up being young women, and then they end up being older women, and they end up being prostitutes, and the people that you're spitting on and that you look down on and that you don't look to, right? That every single one of them has had a rough life and they've been looking for the same love that you've been looking for. They're all thinking that they're broken and just need somebody like you to reach into their life to tell them different. Okay. So anyway, so that was my beginning of my life, of my interaction with police, and then kind of didn't have any interactions. I went about my life. I mean, look, if I'm not out, I'm not drinking, I'm not shooting people, I'm not stabbing people, I'm not dealing drugs, I'm not breaking the law, I'm not doing anything to attract the police attention to me, I didn't have much interaction with them. So then I get into this line of work, and you know, a lot of the people are either ex-military, ex-police, FBI, CIA, those type of people. And they're all cops. And every time I go out on a mission, it's a joke now that say that I'm usually the only criminal that's on the team, which has come in handy, by the way, to have my mind of what I went through when I was younger in a couple of different scenarios. And so the police that we have to coordinate with, number one, Donald Trump is by far and away the biggest blessing to fighting this war on pedophilia and human and child trafficking, especially, that has ever hit the United States of America or the world in general. There's so many things that you can find it if you look for it, some of the things that he's done. And then I know because of my position, a lot of other things that nobody will ever know that he has done to support the fight against this. Like you said, I've been doing this for years and years and years. And the only reason I put my face out here is to bring awareness to this subject. And there's a reason why just now everybody's waking up and going, holy shit, 800,000 kids in America. Yes, you know, a lot of those abductions, I mean, 200,000 of them, those abductions are parents stealing their kid from the other parent, you know, and you narrow it down, but there's 500 to 600,000 children that are abducted every year in the United States. There's 10 million children being traded as property, whether that's for labor or for sex, in the world currently today. There's 20 million adults that are being traded. But you know why we don't talk about it? Because they're Asians making LeBron James's tennis shoes. They're making our cell phones, right? We don't care that they're prisoners or slaves because it's serving us, right? And so there's a lot of that stuff that we have to change the minds of people around. But at the end of the day, that transformation and who I work with now, you know, you hear all this racism about police officers. And my favorite story to this day was we were out on a rescue and we finally found this girl. She was about 15, 16 years old. And we found her and she was with her pimp. And we surrounded the car both with vehicles and our bodies. And we're waiting for law enforcement to come in. And we have this dude on our team. I can't use his name, but we call him Big Mike. And he's a giant white dude. I mean, he is the whitest human being you will ever meet in your entire life. Bearded, looks just like any country folk that you would ever see, but he's a huge dude. And he stood guard next to her side of the car in 10 degrees, something like that, outside. And he stood there for 4 hours while we waited for law enforcement to show up. And at one point in time, this little brown girl rolled down her window and she said, "Aren't you cold?" And he goes, "Yeah, I'm cold." She goes, "I can't believe all of this is just for me." And he looked at her. It's so hard for me to say this without crying, but he looked at her and he said, "Oh, baby girl, there's been 26 of us that have been looking for you for a very long time that love you, that have been praying for you. We're not going anywhere." And he was a white ex-cop, right? And the entire team that was with us, it's a mixture of all kinds of people that were there for the heart of service to find this little girl. And we didn't care what color she was. She just happened to be brown, right? It didn't matter to us because she was somebody's child. And some of these kids, nobody's looking for. So when I work side by side with law enforcement now, I see their heart. They don't take that job to go hunt down anybody. Now there's douchebags and dickheads in every, you know, in every world. And I know that some of them become cops. I get that. But for us to burn down this country, you know, what has happened when we attack these cops, I'll give you a very real example of what's happened. Okay. They defund the police effort that this idiot governor in California, Newsom, right? I know it's Newsom, but he's scum to me. So, you know, what happened was they started defunding the police, and guess who went first? In all of LA County, they had 35 specialists on the force for child trafficking. 35. Guess who was gone first? That unit. Are you fucking kidding me? You know what I mean? Like, are you kidding me? That's what's happening in these primarily Democrat-driven areas. And again, this isn't a political thing, but what's happening is you're taking away resources, and a lot of the children that are being taken are children of color who have broken families and drug-addicted parents, right? White, Hispanic, Black, it's a poverty issue. It's not a racial issue. And so when you can make somebody so poor that they don't matter to all the high-minded people with money, they just say, oh, your kid's gone? Oh, that's a sad story. Let me go back to my latte behind my gated community and I'm going to be just fine. So what happens is you start to see this defunding actually impacting, and you've got everybody out there telling lies that doesn't see this stuff in the face with their own eyes and see how it's impacting people. There's been more people that have been killed during the riots, more Black people that have been killed during the riots than the last 3 years combined of unarmed police attacks, right? There's been 5 times the amount of police officers killed in that same amount of time, right? So it's just knowing that knowledge is, it's always going to be a problem when a police officer kills an unarmed person, right? There's 3 times the amount of unarmed white people that were killed. The challenge is getting those people trained correctly and addressing the problem. But in the meantime, what just happened in Kenosha, they burnt down primarily Black-owned businesses for a guy that was resisting arrest. It's just, to me, it's like I say these things and I'm thinking to myself, somebody's going to think I'm racist, you know, for saying the truth. And so my relationship with law enforcement is that, yeah, I think 98% of them are heroes that do the shit every single day that I dress up and go do whenever I'm called to go do this undercover stuff. They're doing it every single day and they're heroes and they stop people from dying. And they call it the thin blue line because it's between them and the criminals. You see it, 250% spike in New York in violent crime, 250. So to bring all of that to, you know, to some sort of a fucking point, the way that we're addressing it is completely wrong. And it's destroying one of the last bastions in this world to protect the individual, right? If they get their way, trained Marxists, which is what BLM actually states that they are, that is about a small group of people taking control of industry, of wealth, of the medical system, right? That's what Marxism is all about. And that's what they're trying to do. So by the way, did you know this fact? 86% of all trafficked children at some point in time go through our hospitals, right? Wow. So if nurses were trained to see them, this is why I think it's a little bit coordinated, right? Is because defund the police has taken sex trafficking police officers off the street, okay? COVID wiped out hospitals that see all of these victims. Because if you don't have COVID, you're not coming in. So if you've been beaten by your pimp, by the person that was there, you know, you've been stabbed, you've been shot, you've been whatever it is. It seems to me like it's either coordinated or a radically, what's the word that they say? It's just a coincidence, like a radically weird fucking coincidence. So I think we're in the fight of our life right now on that end, but I guess that's not what the show is about. My point being in the entire thing is that law enforcement is not your enemy. They are a blessing to most of our lives. And I think that a lot of them lay their lives down to do what's right most of the time.
Yeah, I agree. So I think just maybe we've been on, of course, for an hour as we do, but there was something that you talked about that I think is really relevant to this show and is really relevant to my message as well. And so I'd love to just hear your perspective on that. And it is that ultimately, well, first of all, our global economy was built on slavery and it continues to be supported by slavery. And I think this is something that the majority of people do not have an understanding of. They don't understand that every time you go pay for that latte, like that latte that you are being served is literally being served on the backs of people's bodies. And this is the thing that I really feel like we need to wake people up to. And so you had said something just a minute ago about, you know, and I do think it's all coordinated and it's all related. And from my perspective, when you look from a very high level, it's about people as commodities. How much money can we make per human being that's on this planet? And we can most easily control and manipulate the poorest of our collective because they are beaten down. They can be easily emotionally manipulated. So regardless of what you're talking about, coronavirus, Black Lives Matter, I mean, any of the other dozens of little things that have popped up. It's like, ultimately, this control and manipulation is to serve a greater agenda, which is a small group of people controlling a global economy that is supported on the backs of bodies. I would love to hear.
So let me address that, because this is the next project. I'm about to kick it off. I have a name for it, but let me tell you about the premise of what it is. Is that the reason why, if you destroy America and you destroy what we've built, what it is the last bastion of hope for people. People come in here from all over the world for the chance to be able to, you know, you saw this little, the little restaurant that was built, and they don't come here to get rich, but they're just like, I can breathe free air and I can do my Cuban restaurant in Miami and I can make a living and I can put my kids through school and I can be a free person without it being forced upon me to do that in the Cuban regime, right? Or some other regime that doesn't allow that kind of fiscal freedom. Because at the end of the day, freedom, part of freedom is not just of your mind, right? Mind is where you need to be free first. Viktor Frankl, Man's Search for Meaning, read it. There's one line in there that I'll tell you right now, which is when he was at the pit, he had been stolen out of his life, thrown into a prison, being starved to death, didn't know if he was going to be in the gas chambers for being Jewish, no other reason, and was in there. And he said, I am more free than my captors, right? I am more free than my captors. So your mind has to be free first. Part is secondarily why Anton J. Global, why my consulting company is so important to me is because the next piece of that is fiscal freedom, right? Fiscal freedom. You have to have the freedom to be able to live your life the way that you want to. And that means the more money, the more choices, right? And we have taken of all of the thing. Now I'm going to jump kind of far ahead, because this is what this movement that I'm about to kick off is all about, is that you have this thing that where everybody thinks that the internet was the great equalizer, because knowledge has always been the key commodity traded amongst the elite. Think about it. Black slaves were punished if they knew how to read. They were punished if they were trying to read. You go back even further, white slaves were punished. And if they were reading, if they knew how to read, if they tried to educate themselves, if they knew math, right? So throughout history, it was the knowledge was the thing that set you apart and made you part of the elite. So therefore, knowledge is the thing to be controlled. Well, the internet was supposed to come along. You see Arab Spring, and we're like, this is what free flow of knowledge does. Truth gets out there. Now, what do you see? You see unethical capitalism, Google, Facebook, Amazon, right? These areas that are choking down free flow of thought. Yeah, there's some right-wing idiots out there, and there's some left-wing idiots out there. But the idea is that all of that information floats up for us, the discerning public, to be able to filter through a prefrontal cortex that God blessed us with, to be able to filter through and say what's true and what's not. Now, we have slave owners called Jeff Bezos, right? We have the Google people, right? We have the Facebook people that are telling us what's true and what's not. So let me take that one step back. What I believe made America great is a middle class, okay? When everybody says, I want to go there for the opportunity, you can be the poorest person on the face of the planet, and there is a way for you to become wealthy, right? Or influential. I mean, for crying out loud, we have people from other countries that are now congressmen and senators, and we had a black president. Like, there's so many great things about this country that open up opportunities for everyone. And that middle class is the thing that does it for us. Now, you started back in the days of Henry Ford. Henry Ford built the middle class. How did he build it? He said, what if I paid my workers enough money to be able to buy the thing that they're actually making, right? That was the birth of the middle class. When they say you can climb the ladder of success, because there's three rungs, poor, middle class, and wealthy, right? That's it. If you take away the middle rung, we're right back to feudal states. We're right back to the caste system in India. We're right back to if you don't have the right blood curse coursing through your vein, which means the Romneys and the Bushes and the Clintons. And if you don't have that blood coursing through your vein, you're not going to be running shit. This country was founded by men and women that said that you're supposed to go to government. It's supposed to be a sacrifice. You set no laws against yourself and you go back to your life having not set any laws against yourself, having made it better. Not to go there permanently, not to go in poor and come out rich. Go back through any politician that you know from all the way the last 50 years and watch these bastards go in and get rich on our backs. The things that they throw people like, oh, what's her name? She went to prison for insider trading. Those assholes are doing it every single day and it's legal because they make the laws. And they never have to go back to private life to sit against it. They make special laws for them, for their kids, for their tax purposes, for all of the stuff. They have separate rules. That's called elite, people. That's not called a representative democracy. Where I'm going with all this and what needs to happen is that we have to put our brakes on allowing the unethical rampage of these knowledge. They're not now, you know, Bezos owns newspapers and Google, you know, all the searches and Facebook, all the personal stuff and all this. We have just given it. We've abdicated our power to them. And now Jeff Bezos, who's worth $180+ billion. Like, come on. You know what I mean? Like, I'm a capitalist, but I'm an ethical capitalist. And like the last time I checked, Costco, they have limits on how much the CEO can make. And any additional profits get split between the people that work there and the people that have stock in the company, right? That's ethical. Some people are smarter than other people. Some people work harder than other people. They should be rewarded more than other people. But that doesn't mean you have to continue to hoard it. He's doing the opposite. Bezos is doing the exact opposite of what Henry Ford did. He said, I want to pay these people as little as possible for a short amount of time as possible. And I want to have all this technology around them so that even the low paid people can be replaced by a robot who doesn't get pregnant, doesn't get sick, doesn't talk back and doesn't have unions, right? So they're destroying the very base of who can buy from them in the first place because it's become an unethical pursuit, right? And so when you have a socialism or a socialist regime or mindset come up to say, look at all the rich people, that's why people listen to them, because of assholes like Bezos, not because of people like Henry Ford. And there's a lot, the small to medium-sized business owner are all ethical business owners in my mind, because they know their people that work for them, right? They know their problems. They help them buy businesses. They help them buy homes. They help them buy their first car. They help them take care of their kids. They help them do all this stuff. That's ethical capitalism. And yes, the business owner who risked their house, their financial position, like you broke down, all of those people, they risk that stuff for the purpose. And so they're going to be rewarded a little higher level unless they're part of the 90% that fucking fail, right? Like they borrow the money, they go in the hole. Like you ended up working your ass off for a decade and being a couple million bucks in the hole for all of your effort. But you know what? Your people got paid up to the very damn end, didn't they? While you weren't getting paid and while your house was falling apart and while all of this shit, you are the epitome of fucking ethical capitalism. And this is the project that I'm working on and why Anton J. Global, my company, is so radically dear to my heart is because we need to rebuild small to mid-sized companies. It used to be that you could go to work for a corporation. You could work your way up, you know, from the mailroom to middle management or whatever it was. And that was our middle class. These businesses have been raped of the middle management in their organization. They've been raped. And they're just being taken. Now the lower level is being raped and they're being taken away. So the only way that we're going to be able to restore the middle class permanently in this country, right, and then spread out throughout the world is to re-resource Black people, Mexicans, Asians, white people, women, gays, straights, all of us, resource us with the knowledge of the fucking book of knowledge, that chapter that's been ripped out by Google and by all of these other overlords of information, and reinsert the chapter called, How Do I Make Money? That's why my company fucking exists, right? I don't need the money anymore. I'm out here to kick the shit out of the elite who think that they can piss down on us and expect us that it's fucking raining and tell us it's raining. Oh, we're just pissing all over you, but it's just rain. It's just rain. No, it's not. You're pissing on us. So that's how you rebuild the middle class. That's the work that needs to be done. And how you do that right now, everybody wonders, well, Jason, I don't want to wait for your shit. How can I start doing that now? You find a small business in your community and you do fucking business with them. And you tell them, I'm not buying from Amazon. You don't buy from Amazon. We do business with each other, right? Because another impact that's happening right now is because what's going on with the tax base that's ripped out. Bezos, they don't pay local taxes. They say, oh, we pay our fair share. Bullshit. They don't pay for the fucking the school that your kids are going to. They don't pay to pave the roads. They don't pay any of those taxes because they get out of it. Because guess what? Their elite people in Washington, D.C. are making it okay. Oh, you don't have to pay that. Just make sure you put $1 million into my campaign account, okay? Make sure that my kid gets into Harvard, okay? Da-da-da, all the sweet little fucking deals that are going on behind the scenes. And so what happens is our tax bases are being ripped out of our small communities. And what happens is now you have people going, well, shit, how are we going to do that? We heard about Colorado. Colorado sells weed. So if we sell pot, now we're going to replace that tax base. So instead of incentivizing a progress behavior, now we're going to sell fucking weed to everybody. And let me tell you, my girlfriend obviously is one of the greatest people on the face of the planet who's in that business. There's so many medicinal things that are positive about. I'm not an anti-weed guy, right? But I will tell you that weed, alcohol, food, drugs, opioids, all the shit that dumbs us down to a point where it's not medicinal anymore. It's just about escapism. That makes us less productive. We want to work less, and then we end up fucking with no job, and we end up getting attracted to, we are owed shit for free, and then we get I can be part of that family, and all we got to do is go knock down the windows of fucking Gucci and steal the fucking shit because it belongs to us in the first place. That's what happens. When you keep rewarding this type of behavior, then that's what our world is going to look like. So anyway, how did you get me on this fucking rant in the first place?
We were talking about people as commodities, but I think like you really nailed it. And I can't wait for the new project, and I can't wait for the how do I make money? I mean, that's it. And how do I become my guarantee? How do I become my guarantee and stop looking outward for people to give me a job, for people to handle all of my financial business for me? It's like, how do I bring that back to myself? How do I empower myself? How do I step into my sovereignty around, you know, my financial wellness? So I can't wait for what's to come. Like, I love hearing your perspective. I love how unapologetic you are in sharing everything that you share. And I love you. So
I love you.
Thank you so much for your time today.
It's my pleasure. I hope I feel like I just talked for the entire time. I want everybody to know how wonderful you are and how talented you are. And by listening to your show and following your podcast and doing your programs, I know people that have gone through it. I know the advancement that they're making. And you, just like me, are not for everybody. You're not everybody's cup of tea. But when you want no bullshit from a very powerful female energy with wisdom and having her ass handed to her in life and then making it back and really being able to design and paint her own future to live where she lives in paradise and to have the life of freedom that she does. I highly respect you. I love you. I respect you for so many reasons. We're always going to be family, and everybody should follow you and the things that you do.
All right. Well, thank you everyone for listening. It's been an epic episode of the Wealth Witch podcast. I'm so grateful to have been here with you and share this time with you, Jason. Until next time, this is us signing off.
That's a wrap. Thank you for joining me. Remember, wealth is a mindset, and you absolutely deserve to live the life you deeply desire. And with belief and intention, you create your reality. Until next time, this is Leah Steele, the Wealth Witch.